Well, Vikings fans, what I'm saying, it is going to be, we hope. So what do we got? We got this Sunday, then next Sunday, then the next Sunday's off, and then the next Sunday after that is Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl's on February 4th. We're January 14th. So 3 weeks, right?
Yep, 3 weeks for the day.
And even though the Vikings aren't playing in one of those weeks, as they're playing the first Sunday and the last Sunday, so it's 3 weeks in a day. So it's 22 days, right, of starting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as Vikings fans, we hope it's a 22-day journey.
That would be awesome.
And whether it's a one-day journey today and it ends, or a 22-day journey, the chances are better than not that it's going to end in heartbreak. I mean, we know the numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this. If you give the Vikings a 65% chance to win every game, which is not going to be the case, I'd say today they're probably a 60 to 65% if you crunch the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They're at home. But next week they're going to Philadelphia, and if you go on the BPI index, they would actually be a 45. Earlier, I saw they were a 45% chance of winning at Philadelphia, and if they end up facing the Patriots, they'd have like a 48% chance. If you go on this thing, because they'd be around 50, because there'd be some advantage to being at home, in their home stadium, I'll say, because they won't have a home crowd.
Right.
But if you crunch those numbers, that means the Vikings have about a 15 to 20% chance. And I think they're 4-1. I don't want to get into that discussion again, but it's, you know, which the guy sent me a letter on and said that it's either 20% or 25%. I'm not right. I would say that if you just crunch the numbers, if you took all the stats and you said the Vikings are 65% today, 45% next week, and then they get in the Super Bowl, they're about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
That means they got about a 20% chance of winning the Super Bowl, which is as high as probably any team other than the Patriots.
Yeah.
And the Patriots' chance, because they're playing at home and they probably would be the best team as far as the number crunch, they're probably a 30% chance. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a 50% chance that it's going to be either the Vikings or them. And the Steelers are probably around 20%. And then the other teams are lower. So I understand. And you have to go into this journey understanding that there's probably an 80% chance that it's going to end in heartbreak.
Yep.
And I think when you understand that, you still have to go in and enjoy it. You have to, I mean, I'm looking at today's game almost, you know, I've heard so many people say, I'm really looking forward to the game. And I'm not looking forward to the game. Does this make sense to you? I'm not looking forward to it because the emotional roller coaster of it.
Yep.
And I've talked about this before. I'm 57 years old, right? And I got to thinking, you know, in talking to Evan, he said in 98 when the Vikings lost, he thought, I don't want to invest this emotional effort in this anymore because the loss is so crushing.
Yeah.
For me as a fan, I don't want to put myself through it. And I know that was a crushing loss for me, and then the Saints was a crushing loss for me, and Super Bowl IV, all four Super Bowls were crushing losses for me, and I've been through them all as a fan. I've watched every single Vikings playoff game they've ever played in. And with the exception of the first one, when I was too young to really know what was going on and they got beat by the Colts pretty easily, I didn't have much emotional involvement in that other than I was interested and became a Vikings fan very much the next year. Every other time they lose in the playoffs, you feel a depression. That is and you think that's stupid. But I was reading about this, and there is a lot of psychology on this. Mm-hmm. To the point where they say this is a healthy thing.
Really?
That this is a healthy thing.
Doesn't feel healthy.
And I'm gonna talk about this. It says ardent sports fans, this is from like Psychology Today. Ardent sports fans will hold on to the passion for their team no matter what. However, even the truest of fans may find that their faith is tested when things aren't going well for their beloved team. Social psychologists have identified two patterns of reaction that sports fans have to their team's performance. Here we'll explore them as well as several other related psychological concepts. And this is one of the big ones. First, it's called burging. This is not like binging, either alcohol or Netflix. It's called basking in reflected glory. Mm-hmm. When your team is doing well, you feel great. Research shows that on the day after a team's win, people feel better about themselves. They say, we won, and by we, they don't mean themselves personally. The closer you identify with the team, the more likely you are to burge. People who burge also are more likely to wear their team's regalia on the day after a victory. This is not an uncommon factor, even beyond sports. This is where people also burge what? In their accomplishments of their children,
mm-hmm.
right? That when your children do well, you feel great. When they do poorly, you feel badly. You are bonding to what other people are doing. There also is a sense where people need to feel like they're part of a bigger group. We've talked about this. This is why gangs become so prevalent, where kids don't have a good parental influence. Maybe they don't have friends, and they can become part of a gang or part of a group, just like you might become part of a football team or part of a chess club or part of anything else. That kids that have nothing else will join maybe a gang who does criminal activity. Mm-hmm. You do that. Here is Alan Pringle, PhD, says, it doesn't matter if it's cold and miserable outside. People will show up for the football match and think, I must be mad, but they show up anyway. He goes, perhaps you've wondered the same about yourself or another fan. So why do we have such deep-rooted ties to our teams? Edward R. Hurt, PhD, also talks about basking in reflected glory and how that's the thing, and how many fans pride themselves in sticking with their team through the bad and the good. It's like a badge of honor. When we talk to these fans, they don't like the fair-weather fans because they don't feel like they earned the right to revel in the glory when the team's successful. It's exactly right. And so they even talk about how it's very, and I'm trying to find where they talk about how it's healthy. It says, fandom may also have evolutionary roots. One of the fundamental fears of humans is to be isolated, alone, and not connected to others. So anything that aligns with us with others makes us feel good, Hurt said. This fear has always driven us to seek out others like us, adds Hurt. In our evolutionary history, it helped us survive because we were around people of our own species and away from people of other groups who were potential threats to our environment. And sports also, and this is, to me, what I think is one of the keys of being a fan. Sports allow a safe place to express your emotions, mm-hmm. right? That you can feel your emotions. But like I said, I am going into this, and in life, we just heard Tom Lindemann say one of the reasons he likes to travel is to put himself in a place where he feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he feels that uncomfortableness. People speak a different language. Where am I going to sleep tonight? What's going to happen? Are these people going to turn on me? I'm uncomfortable in this situation. How do I handle it? Mm-hmm. And that gives him juice. Some people don't like that. But I now realize this is what I like about sports. And I'll tell you how I realized this for me. When I was a sports writer, you had to be objective. And I remember covering some Vikings games when I was down in Florida, when the Vikings would come and play the Bucks. And I looked at the Vikings. I wasn't cheering for them to win. And I realized that I liked sports less because what I realized is I do enjoy sports. I enjoy the beauty of sports. I enjoy watching, the playoff games yesterday. Mm-hmm. But I really don't. The main reason I enjoyed watching the playoff games yesterday, the reason I liked watching the Falcons Saints or the Saints Panthers game,
yeah.
and why I liked watching the Falcons Eagles game was because those were setting up who, if the Vikings win today, they're going to play.
Right.
So I had a personal interest in it. If I don't have a personal interest in it that gives me some juice on it, I still like watching a football game, but I'm not like one of these guys that because an NFL game is on, I watch it all the time.
Right.
I'm really not. I really need to have that emotional desire of watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I realized that today when I watch the Vikings game, and hopefully it's three more games, I will be on edge. I will be uncomfortable.
Yep.
I will be have a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach almost every single third down play for either team.
Yeah.
And I was watching that Falcons game yesterday, and as they were on the 2-yard line, it was fourth and goal from the two, I remember thinking to myself, thank God I'm not a fan of one of these teams. That would just be horrible, whether you're the Falcons or the Eagles. You're sitting there, and this play is going to decide whether your team moves on or not. That is so horrific, yet I love it. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, complete sense.
And I've read that there's nothing unhealthy about that. In fact, he says, this is what this psychologist writes. He goes, sports allows a safe space to express emotion. There's so much emotion wrapped up in sports for many people who are fans. They don't know why it's the case that sports make them feel something that other things really don't. That is true for me. Another psychologist agrees, says there are a few places men can actually cry. Well, I cry all the time. But the stadium, you have men crying over things, hugging each other, and it's totally accepted in that confine. They can scream and be anxious and do all these pretty unmanly things, but they're socially acceptable. Yet if you were in a different environment and you tried hugging a man, you'd get pushback. I've interviewed people who are police officers and lawyers, and they tell me that they deal with people who are rotten all week long. So when they go to the stadium, they shout and scream. They'd say things like, the fans on the other side can't reach you, and you can't reach them, so it's okay to swear at them and tell them their teams are lousy, Pringle said. So it really allows, in addition to the psychological effects, Research has shown that there's also physiological effects. And this, any sports fan has realized this. For instance, one study reported that burging, where you're basking in reflective glory, causes changes in the production of endocrine hormones. In addition, testosterone levels increase in fans of winning teams and decrease in fans of losing teams. So I guess when I put it to you this way, I've talked about, this is very similar, I think, to gambling. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I took the Evan Little route, the producer here who jumped off the ship when the Vikings lost in 1998. One and only time I ever bet with a bookie, I had a really bad beat. And at that time, I was making like $13,000 a year. And I had a $50 bet, which was a lot of money for me. Mm-hmm. And I lost it. And when I lost that bet, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I felt so bad that I thought...
And you got so irritated by your...
Yes. I got irritated by the result, how random it was, how I threw away that money that mm-hmm. I really couldn't afford to lose, that I said, I'm not doing that again. And I have bet with a bookie occasionally since then, but it was more for fun. And I bet with friends and I'm in pools and I like to think about the spread and pick against the spread and mm-hmm. have little wagers with friends on stuff. But I would never go in and bet seriously against the spread. Right. It's just too crazy. But in sports, and especially if you're a Vikings fan, there's been no team in this town that takes you on these journeys as often as they do.
That
right?
is true.
29 times true. In 57 years they're in the playoffs. And this is now, I believe, the fifth time since 1990 they put the... They put in the bye system.
Yeah.
This is the fifth time the Vikings have been a one or two seed. And in fact, they've been a number two seed now four times. Mm-hmm. And they've been a number one seed one time. We all know when that was 1998.
Yep.
Now, for good news is, when they've been the number one seed or when they've had the bye, they've always won the first game. Yep. But they've always lost the second game.
Yeah.
So it could happen next week in Philadelphia, and it could happen today. But I'm saying when you're in that position, they put you in that position a lot. And we all know when we go into that position. So I'm trying to say this is the team. I feel it's different. I'm trying to trick myself.
Yeah.
But I know today. And I don't necessarily get mad. I get sick.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you.
It'll happen. When Blair Walsh missed that kick, I just felt sick.
Yeah.
But I want to go on that journey because it's fun. And when mm-hmm. it's over, I realize within, It's not, I'm not going to ruin my life or break my TV or go kick my dog. I always look at my three dogs and I say, which one of you is the candidate to get kicked today when the Vikings lose? And they all look at me like they can understand me. Of course I wouldn't kick my dog or dogs. I want to go through that process, but it's going to be painful. That's all I'm saying. It's going to be painful.
All week working the other job, I've been thinking about this game. I'm just getting nervous, because I know that if they lose, I'm going to be sick and I just don't want to be there. But if they win, I know I'll be extremely happy and I want to be there, but I don't want them to lose because I don't want to feel sick and just,
If they win, then we know we got to go through it again.
Yeah.
And then if they win that one, you got to go through it again.
Yeah.
And
there's a 2-week break.
Yeah. And this 2-week break almost killed me. Yeah. I don't want to get it over with. So I look at it with dread. So mm-hmm. they say, why do it? But I love that dread.
Yep.
And that's what, and apparently that's not a bad thing. It's a good release of my emotions. So I will, act like I'm 9 again and enjoy it. Try to enjoy it this afternoon, but it won't be enjoyable. When we come back, a team that I am enjoying, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Join 1500 ESPN at Menards in Brooklyn Park this Friday. The 1500 ESPN promo team will be there 4 to 6 p.m. with your chance to win station prizes. More details at 1500ESPN.com, keyword events.
There is something that happens to me when I'm watching a team that I care about, and at some point I come to the realization that they're good. Okay, and I can tell you when I came to that realization for the Vikings, I think was when they after they beat the Lions on Thanksgiving Day, when all craziness could have occurred and all disaster could, right? Remember that? If they'd lost that game, the mm-hmm. Lions would have had the tiebreaker and blah, 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 blah. And then watching them play against the Falcons. And it didn't change because I remember the play against the Falcons. They had like 3rd and 5. And they were only up 14-9, and there was still a lot of time left in the game, 5 minutes or something. And Case goes back, and Thielen runs a great route, and they complete the pass. And I said, I don't have to worry about this team. Doesn't mean they won't lose games, obviously, because they lost to the Panthers, who are a good team. But I said, this team is a good team. They're going to play good. Mm-hmm. They're going to play well, maybe is the right word. But they're going to play good. They're a good team that's going to play well, and they're going to play to their character, and that they've got it together, okay? And that's why I'm... when the Vikings lost to the Panthers, that's where I started talking about the redemption tour, and I started saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, six more wins, and that I was convinced that even in that game that they lost, you know, things happened in that game. Weird things happened in that game, which can happen. And you, especially when you're playing professional sports, because every team you're playing is really good. Even the worst team, like I brought this point up, when Alabama's playing the Gophers in football, they're not going to lose to them. But the worst team in the NFL, maybe even the Browns can if you kick them out, you know, the lower level teams can still beat you. There's not that big of a gap, and certainly when you're playing the Panthers, who are a top 10 team on their stadium, and just like if the Vikings are playing at the Eagles next week, you know, the Vikings will probably be a slight favorite, but we know that's going to be a tough game. I have confidence that they're a good team, and that if they lose, it won't be because they played poorly. That's really the way I feel about the Vikings, and I'm starting to feel that way about the Timberwolves. I mean, and I really saw it when they, you know, they I didn't see the game when they routed the Pelicans, and then they routed Cavaliers, and I was at that game, and I thought, you know, that's nice, but the Cavaliers had one of those games. Yep. But I said, at the same time, they were leading the Cavaliers by 41.
That's a ridiculous number.
So I said, it tells me that this team is really talented. Mm-hmm. And then when I was watching them play the Knicks, well, then they played Oklahoma City.
Yep.
And I'm watching the first half of that game, and the Wolves could not make a shot. They were running great plays. They were getting wide open looks. Clank, 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 clank. And at halftime, they were tied. And I looked at my wife and I said, I am really like that half, because there's a half where they weren't playing poorly. They weren't turning the ball. They were missing shots they usually make, and they're still tied. I said, that's the sign that they're good. That you, in basketball, you're going to have games when you are clanking shots, everybody collectively. It happens, right? And even when they lost to Brooklyn, I kind of had that feeling. Because, again, Brooklyn has some, you know, is better than people think. And they have this Dinwiddie guy who comes from nowhere, who's making all these crazy shots. And the Wolves weren't making crazy shots. And they got beat. And they didn't have their best game. But they weren't horrible. It wasn't like when they lost earlier in the year and I was losing my mind when they lost to Memphis or they lost to Phoenix, where they were just playing horribly. Now they kind of know how they play. And they're demonstrating it on a nightly basis. And when they played the Knicks were playing out of their collective minds in that game. And the Wolves were missing a lot of easy shots in that game. And the Knicks are making the Knicks are like a poor 3-point shooting team, and they're making everything. Okay. And the Wolves fell down by like 8 or 9 in the first step, but I'm watching this game going, the Wolves are fine. I have this peace about me because I'm going, the Knicks can't keep doing this. They won't keep doing it. This is the feeling I now have for the Wolves. And so I went back and looked, or I just knew from my memory, which is sad, the teams behind them in the Western Conference. The Wolves are now fourth in the West.
Mm-hmm.
The five teams behind them, because the Clippers are right on the verge of... So one of those five teams would be the team that the Wolves would likely play in the first round of the playoffs, unless they collapse. The Wolves' record against those five teams is 11-1.
Wow.
So I tweeted that, and some guy goes, so... And I said, you know, do I have to think for you too? I mean, I it's a fact. Jeez. Okay. I mean, it's like, not so. I mean, so to me, I started thinking, you know, they really want to avoid the matchup with Oklahoma City. Really? The Wolves are 3-1 against them this year. Yeah. They're done with them. Okay. Steven Adams concerns me on that team, but they've got the future of Andrew Wiggins, which is now they got Carmelo Anthony, who it's no coincidence that the Knicks got better when he left.
Yep.
And Oklahoma City got worse.
Yeah.
It just isn't. I mean, they added
Paul George.
But they got worse by adding Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
And Wiggins could be that sort of an anchor for the Wolves, but he's not, because he's happy deferring to everybody. Mm-hmm. If Wiggins needed the ball in his hands all the time and kept holding the ball and jacking it back, now he just kind of gets the ball at the end of the clock and makes some and misses some, makes some nice plays around the basket. But they don't need Wiggins to Wiggins isn't really hurting them in that rotation, because he's probably the fourth most important guy, maybe the fifth most important guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just frustrated that everyone thinks he's a star, but he's not hurting them. And the rest of this team has found their way. And now with Belly back, and now with Tyus really getting confidence, and now with Tibbs, when he plays the bench, he always, like, especially early in the fourth quarter, he staggers the minutes so that Towns always plays the first couple of minutes of the fourth quarter with the bench, which is really smart because now you got Cat out there with the bench. And the bench in the Knicks game is the team that actually pulled away. You know, they were still close and the bench pulled away. So I'm very, I mean, this is a, they're starting to have a bench. They're playing great defense. They figured out their offensive system. Tyus has now become a really helpful player. Teague is back. That gives them depth. I mean, I look at them now and go, this is a team that can win a first-round playoff series. And if they could get into the three-hole instead of the four-hole, and they're playing Houston, I wouldn't expect them to beat Houston, but I would give them a chance to beat Houston.
Because Houston does have Chris Paul, so.
They do, and they're great. Yeah. And when he's not there, they lose. Mm-hmm. And they have James Harden. But again, we haven't the Wolves have not played the Rockets yet, so I want to see how they look against the Rockets. But if they won, I now fully expect the Wolves to have home court advantage in the first round and win a playoff series. I mean, I've seen them play all these other teams. They're better than these other teams. Mm-hmm. They're better than them, assuming health. And then if they could get past San Antonio, and the Wolves are 1-1 against San Antonio this year, and they're right now within a game of San Antonio. Yeah, no, I think San Antonio might have played last night, yeah. So I didn't see how they had done. But if they could get into the three-hole and then in the second round play Houston, which I'd give the Wolves a 20-25% chance of winning that series, you know, where I give them almost no chance to beat the Warriors, this could be a really fun playoff run where you could get to the Western Conference Finals. And even if you get run off the court by the Warriors, there's no shame in that. And did the San Antonio win?
Yeah, they won. So they're a game back.
And then look at it this way. If the Warriors are healthy, no one's going to beat them. But you never know what's going to happen. Look at Gophers. They could have two guys hurt. Mm-hmm. Funny things could happen. Get into position and have the opportunity. And even if you get into the Western Conference Finals and get run by the Warriors, it would be interesting to see how this Wolves team playing at their best, if they can frustrate the Warriors in some respect. I don't know if they can or they can't. I don't know if they can or cannot frustrate the Rockets, because they haven't played the Rockets yet, and they've only played the Warriors once, and that was way at the beginning of the year when the Wolves weren't playing like they are mm-hmm. now. So it'll be fun going forward. I know they play the Warriors two more times, and they play the Rockets four times, so we'll get a better sense of that. But I think that when I now threw 44 games, they only have 38 games left. Wow. The Wolves are a legitimately good team, and I think that they're at worst the fourth best team in the West. We'll take a break, come back. Matthew Collar will join us. We'll get a little more X's and O's on the Vikings Saints game today from US Bank Stadium in about 4 hours.
Remember what got us here. You know, it's a big game, obviously, but we played in a lot of big games, and it is a game. It's the same game we've been playing. Last time I checked, you know, same field, same stadium, same amount of time.
My one question is, if the Vikings win the Super Bowl, will Case Keenum pee his pants? That's my question coming off what he talks about his teammate did when they won the high school championship back in Texas about 15 years ago, or however many years it was 12, I don't know how many it was. But, you know, Matthew Collar, you know, you're a football analyst. You didn't grow up here. You're not a Vikings fan, so you can sit in that stadium today and enjoy watching it. And, you know, probably deep down inside, you'd like to see the team you cover win, because it's fun to cover a team going to the Super Bowl. But you got to understand that for those of us fans, I'm not looking forward to the game today. I'm going to watch it because I the only thing I would hate more than watching it is not watching it. And it's that sickness of being a fan that is really fun to experience. Have you, as a kid, or were you a fan of a team that really got you like that?
Well, you know, I grew up in Buffalo, yeah. So I did get kicked in the teeth a few times. My first sports memory ever was wide right in the Super Bowl,
yes.
From the Scott Norwood kick. So that was when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, I mean, so I grew up around a lot of fans that are very similar to this fan base, where they just tend to expect the worst and that their team is going to botch it. So I could definitely relate to what Vikings fans are going through. And I think that what makes you even more nervous is that this team really deserves to be in the Super Bowl. They are that good, 13-3 and 7-1 at home, and one of the best across every defensive category, a very good offense, that every way you can look at this game, and they could win, and every way you look at this team, they belong. And that probably, as a fan, would make you even more nervous, because if they lose, it's going to be a gigantic letdown.
Yeah, it is. When your team is going and playing, you know, for example, when the Vikings made the playoffs with Adrian Peterson, And then you've heard Ponder wasn't going to start, and you're watching the game, and they're getting killed. And that is nowhere near on any heartbreak for Vikings fan. That was not that good of a team. They scraped into the playoffs. The Twins, you know, it was a heartbreak because they got up 3-0 in the first inning and gave you some false hope, but nobody really expected that team, even if they, you know, beat the Yankees, that they were going to beat Cleveland and Houston back-to-back. I mean, or, you know, we were Cleveland and then going and beat the Dodgers or something. It's when the team is good, like they are now. But I'll tell you what, this team and this coaching staff, I just don't see them screwing it up. Now, in other words, I think if they lose, it's going to be because Drew Brees is remarkably great. And I think that's hard to be remarkably great against this Vikings defense. In Zimmer and in this team, I trust. And should I?
Well, I think you should trust Mike Zimmer for sure. And one of the reasons is that as you watch these playoff games, you often see head coaches botch their situations. Yep. They choke or you know, we saw yesterday a shovel pass at the goal line. What in the world? We've seen this a number of times. Andy Reid not handing off the ball when they're up by, you know, three scores or whatever. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen with Mike Zimmer. I think he's made a concerted effort to improve his situational football and has done a really great job with that this year. And the thing that I would be concerned about is, even going back to week one, that Drew Brees moved the ball pretty well early in that game. They didn't get touchdowns, and that's what ultimately cost New Orleans that game, along with a very poor defensive performance. But if you go back and look at it, the noise didn't affect him, and man, people were every bit as jacked up for a Monday night football opener as they are going to be for this game. So early in that game, it didn't seem to affect him at all, and they moved the ball, and then the Vikings defense just came up big. And I agree with you that Brees is the difference maker here. And if he does that, then I think Vikings fans will be disappointed, but I also think they'll say, well, that's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. So it happens. It's only if you feel like your team really should have won it. If they miss an extra point, or if there's a floating pass into the secondary from Case Keenum, or a bad decision that ends up going for a pick six or something. I think that's the nightmare scenario that is really keeping people up last night. Not so much, well, if Brees beats you, then he's just going to beat you. And he certainly has that capability even against the best defense in the world.
You know, I've seen the Vikings take apart the Rams at the stadium. They did beat, you know, they beat the, and again, it was a long time ago, but they beat the Saints pretty easily, okay, where Bradford lit them up. And, you know, I know that the Saints' defensive secondary is good. Marcus Latimer, the rookie, is good. But I do see, and I know they had a rough start to the season playing the Vikings and Patriots in the first 2 weeks, which would skew stats, but they're just 17th against the pass in the league. I mean, they're below average based on yardage. I'm not saying that's right. But to me, the key for this game is I believe the Vikings defense is going to be outstanding. The Vikings defense does not force a lot of turnovers, and the Saints don't commit a lot of turnovers. So I'm not expecting Drew Brees for the Vikings to get turnovers. To me, the real key here is, can that Vikings offense kind of take the wraps off that they've had on the last 3 weeks, where they kind of play conservative, and we've seen them do it against the Rams and other teams, and make big plays offensively. I mean, they're going to have to. And to me, that's the question in this game. And there's really nothing that I've heard from Case Keenum, including his article in the Players Tribune or the Athletes Tribune or whatever it's called, that he's a confident guy and he handles pressure. And he talked about the pressure he faced after losing the Steelers game, where he could be out of the NFL in 3 weeks. Okay. And this guy is ready for the pressure. I believe it. I believe Case is going to be great today.
The only thing that you would be concerned about is the occasional overconfidence from Keenum that drove Mike Zimmer crazy when he threw the couple of interceptions when they had the big lead at Washington and they almost flushed that away. And there were a couple throws over the last couple of weeks that should have been intercepted, but they weren't. Like, you go back to Green Bay, he had a couple of deep balls that maybe should have been picked or had a chance, and then one against Cincinnati. And you know, sometimes when you're playing those teams that are out of the race, those balls don't get picked. But when you're playing one of the best teams in the NFL in the playoffs, they do. And I would respect New Orleans' passing defense more than you probably. They were in the top 10 in passer rating against, because they were one of the higher teams in terms of interceptions. And, yep. you know, Marshon Lattimore has made himself into a superstar. And it's going to be really interesting to see if they decide to have him shadow Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs, or if they have him just play one side, which I think would give the Vikings a pretty big advantage. But I looked at for me, getting Case Keenum going is all about Latavius Murray. Like, if you watch that Chicago game, the first drive is just Murray, 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 Murray. And Chicago has a legit good defense. And they just plowed him down the field. And they've done that a couple of times. They did it once in Detroit where yep. I think a whole drive was all running.
Right after halftime.
Atlanta.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, if they can do that, then they can, A, keep Drew Brees off the field, and, B, set up those play actions where Case Keenum has been really, really good. I think it all starts there. And I also think that the Saints do not have a great run defense. Their linebackers are just average. And that's where your opportunity might be to start off on the right foot and set Case Keenum up to succeed.
Now, does Cameron Jordan move all over the line?
Yeah, he can line up anywhere. Usually it's not off the edge. But he's so strong that if it's a passing situation, he could line up over your guard. But you're going to see him usually on the left and right side.
And I think one of the things the Vikings defense is exceptional at, and to me the key from them on the defensive side today, is not letting Brees get outside the pocket. I mean, to me, no matter how great your defense is, if any quarterback, especially one as good as Brees or like an Aaron Rodgers, can get outside the pocket, all bets are off.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And one thing that they do a good job of is moving the pocket when they know they're facing a really good pass rushing team. They did this in week one. They did this against Carolina. You know, I had a breakdown on our website, 1500ESPN.com, of one really cool play that they had, just a fake pitch where the entire offensive line moves and looks like it's going to block for a pitch. And then Brees rolls out, and he's pretty much only got two receiving options on the play. But, you know, he drew the safety over with the fake pitch and had a one-on-one matchup with Trey Waynes, and it resulted in a 52-yard pass.
Yep.
And that's the thing that I think they'll try to do against Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, is try to get those guys moving or looking for the run to set up Brees opportunities to get away. Because one-on-one, even though the Saints have very good tackles, one-on-one, Hunter and Griffin can create pressure on a regular basis.
Now, the Vikings are basically healthy except for Easton is out, and I want to talk Terrence Newman in a minute. And the Saints are pretty healthy. They're missing like a third or fourth receiver, and they're missing one of their offensive linemen. Is their loss of their offensive lineman and the Vikings' loss of Easton about the same, different? Where are you at on that?
I think that the Vikings' loss of Easton is more significant because he was a huge role player in the screen game. And the screen game was basically non-existent against Green Bay and non-existent against Chicago. And even when Pat Elflein was out against Carolina, they couldn't get the screen game going either. And that's where they've created so many big plays. And Easton was athletic and fast and could get to the second level quicker than most guards. So that gave them an advantage. I think that the guard that New Orleans is missing, Andres Pete, is kind of just an average player. He's a good run blocker because he's a giant dude, but he's not a great pass protector. So the player that they're replacing him with probably isn't losing much. But I think Easton is forcing the Vikings to shuffle this offensive line entirely around, where I would guess, I got no indication this week because they were, you know, lips are sealed, but I would guess that we're going to see Rashad Hill start at right tackle, and we're going to see Mike Remmers at right guard, and Berger move over to left guard. So Easton's loss forces the Vikings to shuffle everything around.
Right, rather than pay Jeremiah Searles, right?
Yeah, and they don't – I mean, Searles is a guy you can throw into a game and he's not going to hurt you, but he's not a starting-level player, and you'd rather have the most talent you could get on the field at one time. I think that's how they'll do it. It's possible that they could start Searles.
Now, what about Terrence Newman? You know, he's the one guy on the list, and I don't know when that – you know, both he and Everson Griffin came up with sore feet and or sore foot. I know that Everson Griffin, that was kind of what he missed the game from earlier this year with plantar fasciitis, which is a nasty word for sports fans. What's the deal? And Everson Griffin, I guess, practice. He's definitely going to play. But what's the situation with Terrence Newman?
Yeah, all of a sudden, Newman just was out of a practice on Thursday, which came across as a big surprise. So something must have happened at practice. And then he was limited on Friday, and he's listed as questionable. And if he can't play, I would bet that he does.
Right.
But if he can't, then that would be a massive loss for this team. I mean, Mackenzie Alexander only played about 25-30% of the snaps this season. He did okay, but I wouldn't say great. And if you have one weakness on this defense, I mean, it's one of the reasons they're number one in the league is that no one's gotten hurt all year.
Yep.
So if you have one weakness on this defense with Drew Brees playing, I mean, that is the kind of the nightmare scenario outside of losing either Xavier Rhodes or Harrison Smith, because, you know, teams run three wide receivers all the time now, and that nickel corner is hugely valuable. But I would guess that he's going to be out there. I mean, the reason that Terrence Newman came back, I remember him saying this in, like, I don't know, March or something. He said, I believe this team can win the Super Bowl. I believe we're that good, and that's why I'm coming back. That's the only reason. And so I think he's going to probably battle through whatever he's dealing with.
Yeah, hopefully he will. You will enjoy the game. I will not enjoy the game, but I will I will be watching it and in pain the whole game, and it'll be 3.5 hours of great fun. I'll enjoy it from that perspective, but I enjoy it because it causes me pain. Thanks. Enjoy the game, Matthew. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Matthew Collar. Always good stuff. Knows the stuff I don't know. I am ready for the pain, though. But I also think this is it. This is the redemption tour starts today, and then they're going to have a redemption if they get to the Super Bowl. Either the New England Patriots because they stole Joe Capp, or the Steelers because they beat the Vikings in Super Bowl IX. So we'll have something. I will come back and Jonathan Harrison will clean up this mess.
And now it's time to bat cleanup with the stories we missed, or maybe just didn't want to talk about in the first place on Sunday Sports Talk.
All right, Jonathan, take it away.
All right, so Pro Football Weekly named Vikings general manager Rick Spielman as their executive of the year this week. That adds to the list of his honors this year with the team hosting the playoff game tonight. Tom Ricketts, CEO of the Cubs, had some interesting comments at what is called Cubs Convention or whatever.
It must be like Twins Fest.
Yearly thing they have. On Sammy Sosa, if Sammy Sosa wants to be welcomed back by the club, according to Tom Ricketts, he basically has to admit to using steroids.
Yeah, well, all right.
Interesting choice there.
It is an interesting choice. I don't know. I would let it go.
Right, agreed. Zach LaVine, we'll stick in Chicago here. Zach LaVine finally made his debut for the
Good
Bulls
for
after returning from an ACL injury. He scored 14 points in the 107-105 victory over the Pistons last night.
You know, after a dreadful start, I mean, that team, the guys they got in the trade, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and now Zach LaVine, that was actually a pretty good trade for the Bulls, I think, because they start over, they got three young guys. I was not a big Chris Dunn fan. I have nothing against him. But he's doing better. And good for them. And I love Zach LaVine. And they're in the Eastern Conference. I love nothing better than 3 years down the road, we have Karl Anthony Towns in the finals against the Bulls guys. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Because Jimmy Butler was, you know, they needed to get him. They did. And that was a great trade by Tibbs. And we're seeing the benefits now.
Adam Schefter is reporting that the Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia is expected to be named the next head coach of the Detroit Lions after the Patriots playoff run ends.
The beard guy
with the backward hat.
Yeah, if he starts winning games in Detroit, he will become, I mean, how can you
It'll
not root
awesome.
For that guy? He looks like a coach, right?
He looks like a coach, and he looks like a normal everyday dude,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's got a little Mike Tice in him. That's why we love Mike Tice, right? Because he was a normal guy, you know?
The Bears will stick in the NFC North here. The Bears filled their vacant head coaching position this week with former Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy, who looks exactly like a young Brad Childress would look
like.
Oh,
does he? Uptight?
Just the facial features that he has looks exactly like Brad Childress would younger.
Who I heard this week, Brad Childress retired.
Yep, he's retiring.
What's the deal with Pat Shurmur? Is it possible Pat Shurmur will be back with the Vikings next year?
I'm hoping so, but I mean, you still got the Giants, you still got the Cardinals, you still got the Colts. Colts seem to be going for Josh McDaniels, but who knows if he's going to want to leave New England.
I heard Mike Vrabel was going to coach somewhere. Yep. Where's he going?
He's thought of as a future head coach.
Yeah,
he's with Houston right now.
So I'm wondering, you know, maybe they don't want to wait, you know, so
right.
I don't know, we'll see. So that could be, one, we want the Vikings to win because we're Vikings fans, but if they keep winning, maybe that'll also
keep Pat Shurmur.
Yeah,
here.
Which would be good to keep him for another year.
Yeah. According to the Canadian Baseball Network, Justin Morneau will be returning to the Twins as a special assistant to the front office.
You know, I like that they bring these guys back, you know, Torrey Hunter back, and, you know, a guy that probably, if he wants to, that could be maybe part of the organization, be Glenn Perkins, you know, somebody like that. I think that's cool that they do that. But, you know, they're still there. They've redone their whole organization. And, you know, I say in Zimmer, I trust. In Falvey and LaVine, I trust
Agreed.
As well.
I'm right there with you. Ken Rosenthal reporting that the Twins and free agent reliever Addison Reed have agreed on a two-year, $17 million deal. Reed went 2-for-3 last year with 19 saves and a 2.84 ERA for the Red Sox and the Mets.
You know, it's nice. They have rebuilt that bullpen. And that Hildenberger, who, by the way, when Hildenberger came out like his second game, I said Hildenberger's good, and everyone said, oh, it's waived. Hildenberger's good, right? He's going to eventually, I think, be the closer of this team.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, are they, you know, is it good that they, if they sign Darvish, which he's, I guess, one of the finalists, the Twins are?
I'm hoping so.
You know, is that a good signing? You know, you sign these pitchers to these long-term deals. Sometimes it doesn't work. I'm kind of ambivalent as to whether that's a good signing or not. I don't know enough about it to have an opinion, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We'll go to the Wild here. They lost 3-2 to the Flames on Tuesday. 2-1 win over the Blackhawks on Wednesday and got a 4-1 win over the Jets last night.
Yeah, and the Jets had beat the Wild twice, and including embarrassed them once. And I flipped on that game last night. And at one point in the game, the shots were, I think, 28-7 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Jets came back. I mean, they actually woke up. But that's a good win against a good team.
Yeah.
You know, and beating the Blackhawks and Jets, two divisional opponents, back-to-back, you know, they're sitting there. You know, they've got a shot to make the playoffs. We'll see.
We'll stick with hockey here in Minnesota. Minnesota Gophers men's hockey team lost a pair of games to Michigan this weekend, 5-3, 3-1.
You know, it's been, they're still like top 10 in the pairwise, and they might get in the tournament, but nobody, somebody tweeted me over the weekend and said, no one even talks about them anymore. Right. They've completely fallen off the face of the earth. Yeah. No one even seems to care one way or the other.
Why is that? Is that just because there's?
I think it's the Big Ten. It's hockey. There's so much going on. The Wolves are good. Somebody also said that to me about Gopher basketball, and I went,
No.
They were selling out games, and everyone's excited, and now everyone's going, well, and they looked like a big crowd there yesterday because you know these tickets are sold. I'm sure that was looked at as a big game, you know, before the floor fell out, but. I think people do care about Gopher basketball way more than Gopher hockey.
Agreed. Gophers women's hockey lost 4-2 to Vermont on Friday night and beat Vermont 6-1 last night. And to finish off, batty cleanup, the last undefeated in the Premier League, Manchester City, just minutes ago lost their first game of the season 4-3 to Liverpool, ends their undefeated streak.
And you're happy about that?
I am happy.
And they were down 4-0, you said?
They were down 4-1, and within the last 2 minutes of the game, they scored two goals, so there was a chance they might draw and pull it out, but they go down to Liverpool. I don't like either team, but I'm happy Manchester City lost finally.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, and wrap up this Vikings pregame show edition. This is from Pro Football Talk. 4 minutes ago, Terrence Newman is expected to play. I think we would see that. But as I get ready, I will say this, that any Vikings fan that's feeling trepidation, and you can't help it if you do, but if you haven't read the Case Keenum article,
go and read it.
Go read it. And I just want to close the show by reading the last couple of paragraphs of Case Keenum's wonderful article about 3.5 hours away from kickoff. He goes, in high school, we always had this saying about how we wanted each season to last forever. And I'm telling you, as sure as I'm writing this article, that when we said that, we meant every word. But I know better now. Nowadays, man, my goals are a little more modest. Just give me the best football and the best fans that the great state of Minnesota has to offer. Put them all under one roof and give us three more games. And now they're not going to all be under one roof. They're going to have to go play at Philadelphia if they win today. But the dream is there. And if you read that about Case Keenum, he is the right man at the right time for the right team. And it's all there for the Vikings. And I'm going to be miserable as when Drew Brees completes passes, but I'm looking forward to it. Try to enjoy the game. I won't enjoy it, but I will be watching. We'll talk to you next Sunday, everybody, here on 1500 ESPN.